Welcome back to another episode of the Hip Hop Social Worker Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Scott. Today I'm joined by Alejandra Cortez out of Southern California. Go ahead and say what's up.
Hi, everyone. My name is Alejandra. Pronouns she, her, hers.
Right. That's a real social worker. Got
the pronouns and everything. The whole time.
Well, thank you for joining me. You're one of the first accounts that I have followed when I was doing the whole push for the Instagram, and I was just kind of intrigued by what you had going on and things like that. I reached out and want to share your story with the listeners and fellow social workers that often listen to this podcast. So why don't you go ahead and tell people why you chose the illustrious field of social work.
So why I went into social work. Okay. So it's a long story, but I think ever since I was young, I wanted to help people. Like, I always had that mission of I want to come back to my community. So I grew up born and raised in Los Angeles. And so I just always knew I needed to come back. And I wanted to be a doctor. And then that didn't happen, clearly. It was just really hard. I think being first gen and going into school, I went to USC, which is a very undergrad is very primarily very white school. And so I think I really struggled. And so it wasn't until I took they were offering a gang intervention class, and I was I want to take this class. And so a lot of my friends were like, this is a great class. And so I ended up taking it. And my professor would always bring people to kind of talk to the class about gangs in LA, and he had from police officers to ex-gang members to detectives, just a broad variety of people. And so I was sitting in class, and then that day he brought a police officer, and they were talking about just gang injunctions. So LA is still prominent, where the areas are divided between these are areas that are heavily gang infested. And so it has different policies that people can kind of police around. And so for some reason, this police officer is showing a map of LA, and he shows this gang injunction, and he's like, y'all probably have never heard about this area. It's called Cypress Park. And I just awkwardly raised my hand, and I'm like, oh, I'm actually from there. My parents.
Yeah.
And it was just a really weird context of I grew up there, but I guess I had these protective factors that helped me get into USC. But then having someone in academia tell you in a class setting, it was just so strange. And then at the same time, I was volunteering with this nonprofit called Homeboy Industries, which also works with gang intervention and really rehabilitation of gang members. And so I was tutoring someone, and he was also talking, as we were talking, he was sharing how he's from my area, from my neighborhood, a couple blocks off. And so it all lined up, where I was like, this is an issue. It's not fair that we're all in different spaces, but then this is happening in my community. So because that professor in that class was in social work, I played around with the idea. And so I think it was I went to Chicago for a year and saw the same themes of just community needing help, needing change. And so for me, I wanted to go into social work, but very in a macro of how we're changing communities. So I think for me, it was and I'm a licensed therapist, but the one-on-one, but if we're not changing the environment, it's kind of putting a band-aid, it's a repetitive cycle. And so I think that's what for me sold social work, that it just felt so right. This is where I'm meant to be. And once I went into grad school, I was like, yes, this is me. I drank the social work Kool-Aid.
Yeah. I do often feel that way about therapy. It's I've had so many clients that their stressors are community problems. And it just sucks. I try to let's try to cope our way through, you losing your house next week, or stuff like that. I feel, that's something that has to change, It's, it definitely, because I feel wrong, doing things like that. We shouldn't have to, have people cope with these issues that are systemic, you know? So, that is a flaw.
Yeah. And I think for me that's what it was. Like, I think when I first started my social work journey, I really was like focus of like gang intervention and reduction. Like that was just a niche that I was just very interested in. And same when I did this program, it's called like City Year. It's like a tutor mentor program. So that's what I was doing in Chicago. It was like a volunteer experience, but it was the same theme. Like I'm in these schools that are like high need and my gang culture, but you know, it's different from LA to Chicago, but it was still like, yeah, miss, like I didn't do my homework because like, you know, I was trying to stay safe. Like I only came to school because, you know, I almost got killed. So it's just like the same repetitive systemic issues that I was like, yeah, I wouldn't want to do my math homework either if this is what's happening in at home. So yeah, definitely it's systems. And I love to think about like policy and just like meso macro. Like that's where I think change really needs to happen to and then in turn be able to help individuals one-on-one.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You're like the third person that I know that did City Year.
I also drank that Kool-Aid. Yeah. Yeah, okay, I have thoughts, but definitely that can be a whole another conversation.
Yeah. you're definitely like City Year. Huh? I should have did City Year maybe. No, probably not. But All right, so like what, I mean, well, you kind of, you know, gave a backstory about like, you know, like what influenced, you know, the practices that you are, you know, how you do your practices, but like, were there any kind of other things that, you know, like that were something that you really like just want to drive home, you know, like in social work, you know, like were you just trying to, they're like, was there like a few things that are like, I need to do this for my career to be like successful?
Like to be fulfilled as a social worker. Yeah. if I'm talking like big picture, I know social work career would be fulfilled if there's like no social work career left to do, right? Yeah. But I mean, I guess like being more realistic, I think it's shifted a lot. I think within the years, like kind of how I said at first, it was like gang intervention, but then I was like, no, but it's just communities as a whole. And so I think I've had that image of like how I'm helping communities heal and support and provide resources as a whole. And then it also kind of shifted into seeing my social work community, like also an identified community that I feel like I want to give back. And so I think that's what's driven more recently and more recent years, because so when I graduated, like if when I was crossing the stage, I was just like, I'm not going to become a therapist. I was like, yeah. I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can cuss, but I was like, heck no. Definitely, yeah. All right. I was like, hell no. Like, I'm not going to be a therapist. Like, I'm so macro. And so I had difficulty finding a job because, you know, you have to have like 20 years experience or whatever. Mm-hmm. So then my mentor was like, well, you should get licensed. So I decided to become licensed and do that clinical work. And it was like a real struggle because having that macro background then doing clinical was difficult just because of what we had mentioned, but also seeing those systems that were being into play where it's like nonprofits meant to serve like communities of color and, you know, mental health, but then they're burning out therapists unrealistically, like social workers and other licenses of like you need to do productivity, all this kind of stuff. And it's just an exchange of energy of like I'm sacrificing my own mental health for my clients and an agency to kind of profit. And so I'm seeing that's like a systematic thing, right? Like government or like state in California, so state tells these agencies, like, in order for me to give you funding, these are the hours that need to do, or this is how fast you need to submit notes. And ultimately hurting the communities that we're meant to serve because of the like quick turnaround of clients or quick turnaround of therapists. Like I had clients that I was like their third or fourth therapist, you know, things like that. And so I really had a very horrible experience in one of my agencies more than the other, where like I really burned out, like I got like PTSD from like a work job. And so I really had to take time to heal from that. But honestly, like I think that's what helped me identify of like I need to help others that are coming through this way as well. Cause like, we're not going to be able to fulfill our mission as social workers if we're not like helping the next generations coming in to break that like toxic workplaces or mentality that I think when you're graduating, like people are like, oh, you're going to be underpaid and you're going to work all these hours and it's going to suck. So when people kind of go into it, like they're already have this message of, I have to go through this because everybody has to go through this.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a thing that I've become like passionate. And I guess like I share more on my account, like on Instagram, like it shifted. Like at first I was like, I just want to promote social workers that were badass and we're amazing. And, but the only followers that I was getting was social workers. And I was like, but y'all already know this.
Yeah.
But, like, this is not fulfilling the mission that I originally tried to do with this. But I think at the same time, if we're empowering social workers to really message that, it's breaking that, or like I say, like redefining social work of what it should look like. Yeah. So I'm all over the place. Like I have like a lot of passions, and I think sometimes it's really like honing it down and focusing. So I think those are my two things. Like right now on my day job, I am really working. I'm privileged to work in the community I grew up. Like I'm literally getting paid to do what I love. So the grass is greener, but also, yeah. So my community where I grew up and the social work community is kind of what I'm doing. I don't know how I'm done, but yeah. It's going.
Yeah, nice. Well, that's good, because since I've been an official like social worker, I probably have like 9 jobs. so for you to land somewhere and feel like you're doing what you love to do, because even I found the job that I thought that I wanted, but mm-hmm. the environment was so nasty I had to get up out of there. But it was the population I wanted to work with. It was yeah. everything except for the place was just not my speed. So
yeah.
So I had to get up out of there. You had mentioned that USC undergrad was like white centered. Was the graduate school the same way?
Not as much. I think it's like a disconnect. I felt like it was, people are like, oh, USC, like it's so diverse. And I was just like, oh, y'all don't even know. Yeah. Like it's like a little bubble, just because yes, you do have, like I had professors that were diverse, and more of the student body in the grad program was definitely a little bit more diverse compared to my experience that I had in undergrad. So, and I think it did a good job of being a little bit more reflective, I guess, of what LA is and populations. But I know there was just so much controversy in the last year mm-hmm. or years, yeah. a university of scandals and corruption. So mm-hmm. so yeah. I'm hoping that the program shifts where it really regains back its reputation, especially for those that are paying so much money to go there.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear it's an expensive school.
Mm-hmm.
Social work in California, like, really intimidates me. I remember when I was in grad school, there was somebody from California who went to my program because it was an online program. Mm. And he said that his goal with his master's degree was to get a master's degree, get a state job, and retire. I was like, damn, those are your goals? He's like, yeah, you need a master's degree to get a state job in California. I was like, damn, for real? And he said, I don't know how true it was, but I mean, he said that was pretty much the case, that it was so competitive that you got to have a master's degree to get a state job. That's true? Is that true?
I guess, like, if you're trying to move up on the pay scale,
yeah,
it helps to have a master's, especially if you're trying to retire for that. Because, yeah, county, or at least in LA County, it pays pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah, with good benefits post retirement.
That's what's up. Yeah, Oregon, they don't. I mean, some jobs, you know, like you need it for like you know for legal issues. But if you don't need it, they ain't about to honor it. Like I don't care. Like you know. So, but all right. Well, I don't know. California seems scary. Seems like a big place that I can't deal with. I know, like, in my community, you know, African-American the African American community, there's like a stigma with mental health, and you know, just kind of, you know, tough it out, you'll be okay, you know, say rub some dirt on it, kind of attitude. Is that the same way in your community as well?
Yeah. So my parents are both Mexican, and so the population that I was serving as a therapist, and even now, it's definitely more Latino based. Mm-hmm. And so the stigma is there, 100%. And so I learned really quick, I think, as a very baby therapist. I was like, I would say, I'm calling about the referral for your child for therapy. And one parent, like, almost cussed me out. Mind you, it was a self-referral. And she's like, my child isn't crazy. Like, this is not what I requested. Like, I requested counseling, like, not therapy. And then she just, like, hung up. And I was like, okay, so my wording is very important. Like, this is what's happening. Like, yeah. I think my parents, or at least my mom, like, she was so non-traditional of, like, what, like, Mexican parents are. And so she always was open about, like, therapy because she got therapy. So I didn't find that much of a stigma, but when I was working with the community, like 100% there. And so I think the way that I had to navigate that was just being really honest and really upfront and really real, that it was just like, yeah, I'm coming into your home, or, you know, just coming into this space where we're digging the most intimate things of your family, where it's like such a taboo to talk about it. And a lot of parents were like, well, I went through this and I'm fine. Like, I'm still working. I'm still this. And my child is like depressed. Like, what is even that? Mm-hmm. So it was really being patient and providing a lot of education. And just, I don't know, like, I would always consider myself a very non-traditional therapist, in the sense that I would use some self-disclosure or whatever I needed to meet the client's needs. And at first, I think I was very uncomfortable with doing that because it said not to, but then I really reflected and I was like, who's saying I can't? And like, what, the education, like, white people that don't understand my community? Like, so I was just like, fight me, like, I don't even care. I was telling my advisor, like, yeah, I told my student my experience in college about like my being first gen or this being guilty, and you know, like, still providing space for the client because they're there for therapy, but like sharing that, because then it connects. Like, there's that connection and they opened up, especially because I was working more with teens and high schoolers. So that age is just like so difficult sometimes. And so same with the parents, like parents would be struggling and I would be like, look, my dad, he sucks at communication because my grandparents never communicated to them. And we need to learn these skills to break this cycle. And then that's when they like let their guard down. They're like, yeah, she gets it. And they would let me in and work. So that was kind of my technique to try to get work through that stigma on mental health, but it's still very much present.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like that's like, you know, I feel the same way about like, you know, self-disclosure, and just probably some like, you know, generic person telling you, hey, you shouldn't self-disclose, but it's like, I need to, because if I don't, you know what I'm saying? I've been through probably everything this kid has been through. Probably not as much, but I've been through some stuff. Yeah. And if I can let them know that, you know, like, we're it's kind of like the same, everyone the same playing field, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's important to this population, you know what I'm saying? Like, they want to know that they can relate to you, and you're not going to judge them, and you're not going to be, like, shocked when they say something, like out of this world, you know? And I feel like it's unfair for, like, everybody to be held to that self-disclosure thing, because it's like, for us, you know, saying like having that stigma, you know, like, we got to really do something different, you know. Yeah. like we have to build the comfortability, you know, like, it's not just there, you know what I'm saying? Like, especially like if they didn't come in, you know, like, you know, because most times, like, someone sees a therapist, you know, they make the phone call and you know, like, kind of like on their own. But like in our community, like, we're still a teenager, you know, so like you need like a PO makes the phone call, our case manager makes the phone call. So in their head, they're like, I don't want to do this, no way. So, you know, so if I don't go that extra mile to like show them that I'm really here to try to help, you know, break these barriers, then we're not getting nowhere, you know?
Yeah.
We're not going to get nowhere.
No.
How do you think we can, like, break these stigmas and these barriers, you know, like?
I think it's definitely normalizing it, having that word of mouth, I think, helps a lot. Like, in the high school that I was working at, sometimes some of my clients would tell their friends, like, hey, well, I'm working a therapist. Like, maybe you should see her. Like, you know, they would start sharing this. And I think here in LA, it's starting to be a little bit more normalized, where the media is utilizing, like, promoting mental health or that kind of stuff. Like, I recently was talking, I was like on a panel for this like media company that did this like whole research study on how they're utilizing novelas, which is like soap operas, like Latino soap operas, to then create this like message so that people can call in and get resources. So it was like a mental health, highlighting like domestic violence and other issues that women go through. And so what they were doing, it was that they showed the episode, and after the episode, it was a hotline. Like, if you need anything, like, call this number. And so they were seeing like this increase of numbers. And so I think that's where it is, where like they're normalizing it. And I think it's then coming also in future generations, right? Like, breaking that generational gap of normalizing services. I don't think it's going to be like an overnight thing or just like a one solution. I think it's just like different avenues of how we're helping with mental health. And I think after this whole pandemic, or even right now, it's just going to be such a high need with everything that's just going on all at the same time, you know? So it's a lot of healing. And so I think that's why I'm even more pushing more of how we're protecting those that are supposed to be the healers, because if they're not healing, then it's like, it's not going to happen. So.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a good answer. Yeah. It won't take overnight. I wish it would, but.
Yeah. Even my family, sometimes like extended family, like they'll start talking smack and then they're like, oh, about mental health, or even friends like that. Sometimes they're like hesitant. And I was like, I just feel disrespected, because I was like, if this didn't work, like, I wouldn't have a job. Like, what do you mean? Yeah. And so it's really having that, those conversations. And then for me, it's just been, I've been so open about even going to therapy. Like, I've shared a lot, like, oh, my therapist said this, or today in therapy this, and like having those conversations. And even with some of my friends, it's reached a point where I know their therapists, like, names. Like, they're like, well, so-and-so told me this week that I should do this. And I'm like, yes, girl, like, I like your therapist.
So how do you think that like race and mental health connect?
I think it's being open to, at least in the Latino community, I think being open to different avenues of what therapy looks like. And I think it's opening that up, that I think maybe culturally, I know, like, for example, like medicinal plants, things like that, right, that were lost because of colonization. And so it's like, how are we then regaining back? Like, I always have this theme with, like, even, for example, like evidence-based practices and how they're even attuned to the community or race that they're supposed to serve. And so it's like very, there's so many things, like even in our education, of even the self-disclosure thing, right? And so I think there is a disconnect between what therapy is to whatever race we're kind of trying to serve, because there's such different needs. And like in education, all that they kind of talk about, right, it's just like, oh, race is, oh, this culture does this. And even in the licensing, I don't know how, but like in the California license exam, it's like, if they're Asian, you need to be okay with them acting like this, right? And it's just like really awkward. Okay. And then for Latinos, like, you should, if you go into their homes and they offer you something, sometimes you have to accept it because it's culturally accepted. You know, it's like very textbooky. And I know it can be complicated, but I think it's definitely, how are we getting therapists that are reflective of the culture that they're serving also, because that eliminates a whole barrier understanding, and it makes such a difference. Like, and I totally get it, because like I for example, when I first was trying to do it, I think I went to try to go to therapy when I was like a teenager, that my mom tried, and I was like, first intake, and I was like, I'm done, like, I hate it. And I didn't. And then once I started my grad school program, like, I just had gone through so much trauma that I was like, okay, I need to go to therapy. And I went to my therapist, but she just didn't get me. Like, I felt like she was very nice and was doing the interventions that she needed, but I would come prepared, so prepared to session to already know what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. So that she would avoid digging. So I think that opened up of like how I'm serving my clients and how race comes into play, because it wasn't until like 2 years ago that I found a therapist and she was like, I was like, I need to find someone that understands my culture. And she got me, like, certain things I didn't have to explain or things that I needed to process. I didn't have to go the extra mile to not only explain and then hope that she can help me process what I was going into.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of like maybe intuition, but also that stigma that maybe some people need different avenues of healing. Like, is it we're doing more physical or sound, or are we integrating whatever the culture kind of needs to help them build those coping skills that they're going to keep using after they get discharged?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one thing I'm learning too, because just really trying to build up your clients until, you know, they discharge, because, you know, that's really what you should do as a therapist, you know. And it is a tough gig, and sometimes I'm thinking like, damn, this shit is messed up, but you know, but I do it so well, you know. So before we get into, like, you know, your own, like, kind of a creative journey, where did your, like, career take you? Like, you know, like, you went from being a therapist to straight macro, or did you, like, kind of, like, stick around for a little bit? And, like, in the, you know, like, after you got licensed, like, you was like, oh, I'll try it out for a little bit. Then you moved on to, you know, the macro.
Well, I think where it started was, okay, so I did city year after I graduated undergrad. So it was, like, my gap year. Mm-hmm. So when I went back to school, I was just like, okay, I'm back home. I want to do things. I want to help the community. And so as I was doing school, I started becoming involved in, like, organizations on campus. But one thing that I did that I was like, I listened to my professor. I was taking a policy class. And so happened to be that I was digging around in my neighborhood, and they were like, oh, they're having neighborhood council elections. And I was like, well, what's a neighborhood council? And they were like, oh, well, it's these organizations in LA, like, these neighborhood councils that are, like, below council members are neighborhood councils. Mm-hmm. And each neighborhood gets, like, $35,000 to put on events and resources on a community. And I was like, what? Yeah. What was I? What? Like, that's usually a barrier to helping people. I was like, okay, like, I'm in. And so my professor was like, well, you should run, because it's an elected position. It's volunteer, but you're elected by the community. He's like, well, if you run, he's like, that can be your policy paper. Like, just base it off this, like, little election that you're having. And so then I got elected, and so I was serving as president, and so it was great because I was able to see, one, how policy works, but then what I was learning and how I was implementing it immediately in my community. And so I was involved in that, and then I got involved in, like, organizations on campus, and I've always had that history of, like, I want to be involved in 20,000 things. And so I think that solidified of, like, how you can weave and manage and really sell social work skills, because they're so, like, useful in so many areas. And so my internships were very macro too. Like, my first internship was at a psychiatric hospital, and then my second one was at a substance use prevention and treatment program. And so it was also located in my neighborhood. So I had, like, different hats in my community at the same time. And so when I was practicing therapy, my first job was a high intensive risk suicidal clients. And I was, like, on call 24/7 with, like, no rotations. So that's what burned me out. Like, it was just too much, where a year and a half, I didn't turn off my phone, because even if I had the day off, I had to answer calls. Like, it was too much. And then my other job was doing outpatient, but also in school. So it was a little different. I think I got a broad variety, but the instant I had my hours, I was like, I'm out, like, deuces. Like, I think because I always wanted macro, and I love therapy. Like, I think that intimacy, and I'm so glad I did it, that I was able to learn, but also like helping so many clients. And so, but I was just not there. And what happened was I realized post therapy, because I quit my job with like no job lined up. This was like last year. I was just like, I'm out and I'll figure it out. And yeah. I was studying for my licensing exam. But what happened was that because I was on call 24/7, I then created a very unhealthy thought where it was like, if I don't see my client, they're going to die. Like it was like this immediate escalation because like I always fear like if I don't answer my phone and they call and something happened or, and so it just set that foundation. And so it wasn't until my second supervisor was like, you know, why are you so stressed out about this? Like, it's not that bad, that she pointed out like, this is unhealthy thoughts that you're having. Yeah. And then my therapist was like, yeah, this is very unhealthy thoughts. And so even though I was able to work on them, like it still like sometimes escalates like that. So I was just like, I can't hold space for people in mental health right now. Like maybe down the line, I can regain that. But right now I was like, I need a break from that. And so I quit my job and it was hard, like trying to find something and being broke for like a while. And it wasn't actually until my supervisor for my internship, my last internship, called me and she was like, hey, like, do you happen to be looking for a job? And I was like, well, so happened that I am. And so I actually went back to work there, and it's like this grant where I am working in my community that I grew up in. And so she picked me because she's like, when we were writing the grant, we were thinking of you, like you would be great for this position because you've already worked with us and understand that. And so my job has like two parts, like creating and implementing like a youth leadership program at two high schools. And so it's with the prevention piece of like substance use, but really teaching them like kind of not like don't do drugs, but this is what happens, and giving them the power to really pick that. And so then I'm building that and then working with like community coalitions and providing resources and that kind of stuff. So it's a fun job because they kind of let me do what my vision and kind of roll that with.
Yeah, nice. You must have some juice, because like I wish somebody would call me and be like, hey, I wrote this grant thinking of you.
I know, I was like really honored. I was like, oh, I manifested that. I was like, please. I'm like, yeah. Really, and I was just like, oh my god, thank you. And I can see that, because she's like, well, you're an expert in the area and you have the like with youth and everything. And I was like, okay. And so sometimes I'm at work and I was like, can I do this? Like, are you guys sure? And they're just like, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to create this. Because it's kind of like a blank roadmap trying to create a program and not really knowing where it's hopefully going, especially in the virtual world. But it's fun.
I can understand that. Well, that sounds like a good one. So, and then you have the Social Changer, which is your Instagram account, which, like I said, I followed. And you do a lot of things on there, like I think you just mentioned earlier about trying to make social work look like something that people really don't think it looks like, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of what I think I wanted to share. And it came out of a class, like I took a consulting class in grad school. And so I played around with the idea, and then I just created an account and I was like, okay, I'm just going to share kind of my journey. And it's been kind of sharing my journey. Like, I think I'm very open and try to be the most vulnerable. And at first I was like trying to find ethically what was the line, because I was like, if my clients find me and I'm telling like this stuff. And so I just came to the conclusion that one, I just wouldn't follow clients back or I would block them. But I was like, they're not going to find anything that I haven't shared with them already. Like, oh, that I go to therapy. Yeah. Like, shoot. Like I've told them, hey, I go to therapy too. Like, who do you think holds all this crap that I have to hold for other people or things like that? And so I've just been like super open, and it's been like a cool journey to kind of see, because I think when I first started, there wasn't a lot of like social work accounts, and I would go to these conferences and I'm just like, no one's doing social work, or I didn't really know what I was doing. And so I think more recently it's defined more of like really helping the profession and navigating that. And so really highlighting how you can work in a very non-traditional or that kind of stuff. And I think like social workers have a very unique asset that they can offer in very various settings. And I just don't think we're tapping into those. So I really want to help other social workers push into these like settings that are not just this traditional social work, but also helping shift that profession to break that that burnout line. And so that is going to require policy work and advocacy. And so I think we're all, or most social workers sometimes are so entrenched in helping others that they don't take a step back and see like, oh, but how are we also helping our profession? And so, yeah, I think it was just like one professor, I'm just never going to forget. And I just need to share this story because that hit me. And I was just like, people were offended, but I was just like, oh, he's speaking truth. Like he was like this like lawyer and he was teaching a class in the School of Social Work. So he had a different lens. And then one day he just let us have it. He's like, you know what? He's like, social workers. He's like, you guys are fucking stupid. And everyone's like, like gasp, right? Cause he just ripped it. And he was just like, you know, you guys are fucking stupid. Like he's like, look at nurses. Like they started, like who were they? And look at them now. Like their union is like powerful. Like people respect them. He's like, but you guys, like, he's like, who's respecting you guys? Like you guys are not doing anything to protect yourselves. Like blah, blah, blah. Like he let this, like this one, right? And people were like kind of offended. Cause they're like, oh, he's a lawyer. Like he just doesn't understand. Like
yeah. All this
stuff. But I just saw it. I was like, oh, he's kind of speaking truth though. Like,
yeah.
He was being really real. And so, and he had been teaching at the School of Social Work for a while. And so it just stuck to me that I was like, yeah, like, how are we advocating for ourselves so that we can continue to thrive, because it's not fair that then we're burning out new therapists or new social workers and these great people that, like, you know, I don't know if I'm sure at the podcast, like when you ask people like, why did you go into social work, and they give these great passionate answers of like why they wanted to do it and mm-hmm. this is what, and then sometimes that passion kind of goes away, and it's a shame to see that, like, someone that could have probably really made a difference were really turned away from the profession because of toxic work environments and policies that are set into place. So that's like my theory of like what I'm trying to do. I do not know how, and I'm navigating it as I go. And I think now that I'm in a better work environment, I've just been able to be able to do more on the outside for the profession.
Yeah, that sounds good. What kind of things, like do you host events, like kind of meet and greets and
yeah, so
it, hours, happy hours, things like that?
Yeah, so I've been trying to do more of like meetups, but very like intentional meetups. So I'll do like, I kind of branded it as like, oh, social work myself, like how are we social working us, like we social work our clients, right? Mm-hmm. Is it, am I taking self-care, am I investing in myself, things like that. And so I had done like meetups and more like networking events, and now I've shifted more into like I'm doing more trainings for like organizations, but also like, for example, yesterday I did like a resume workshop for social workers, like very yeah. specific, like these are keywords that are in the scope of social work. And so what I'm doing within the next month or so, like launching more intentional, like more workshops, doing resumes for people, and then doing like coachings or really hubs to create this like, change or help support social workers. And so I'm even like identifying people that are like to highlight people that are like kind of social changers, right, that are really redefining and really changing the profession, and having these people share that story of like, this is what I'm doing with a social work degree, and people not understanding that they can do these things as well.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, I feel like we need more of that, you know, like I remember I kind of had the same thing happen to me when I was in grad school. I was like, I seen somebody wrote a book, and the person that wrote a book had it at LCSW. And I was like, what? I was like, this book is a bestseller. I need to figure out ways to kind of make this happen. You know, like as far as like, you know, instead of taking like, you know, a job that, you know, pays okay, and then just kind of not doing anything. It's like, I want to maybe one day, you know, work a little bit and make a lot. Is that a,
no? No, I 100% agree that like you can transfer your skill sets into different areas to make money. Like I firmly believe that, like Recently, maybe in the last, like, what, 2-3 years ago, someone donated, like, $2 million to rename the School of Social Work at USC. Like, so it's, yeah, like, Suzanne, I can't even pronounce it, Dork Peck School of, yes, Social Work. And so I was like, yo, she a social worker and she donated $2 million. And then, like, the comments, right? Because then there's a stigma within the profession. Like, they were like, oh, well, she made her money via real estate. And I was just like, and that doesn't make her a social worker. Like, I just don't understand. Like, that just means that she was smart as fuck. And then, like, was able to transfer her skill sets as a social worker, like, communicating clients, like, networking, setting goals, problem solving. Like, I just don't understand. Like, that doesn't make her less of a social worker. That just makes her a very multifaceted social worker. Like, and so that's where that stigma stays, that we, like, box ourselves into, like, I need to do this. Like, I can do therapy and do XYZ at the same time.
Sure.
Or that kind of stuff. Or, like, people are doing, like, coaching, like, that are, like, it's that fine line, right, of, like, therapy and coaching. Because I'm, like, I would say I'm, like, I want to be, like, a social work coach. But at the same time, like, there's, like, a fine line of people that are selling wellness that don't even have an MSW background and are making more money than MSWs because they know how to market that. And I'm just like, yeah, they're eating it up. Like, right now, you can sell so many things. Like, I don't know who I had said, like, about mediation, right? Because there's, like, this whole hot topic about, like, social workers should be cops or whatever, or even like companies that are dealing with people that don't want to wear masks, right, and how to de-escalate situations. And I was just like, hello, social workers, this is an opportunity for you to offer a training on de-escalation on various companies that probably need it, because people are flipping out about wearing masks.
That's true, you know. And that's a good way to look at it. It's like, because we deal with that, I mean, depending on where you work, you know, like, you're in a dangerous situation. Like, social worker, you probably, if you're a social worker, you're probably in a dangerous situation at work, you know?
Yeah. You think about it, because I was just like, I've been reflecting about it, and I was like, dude, like, I was going into people's homes, like, not knowing what was going on, and, like, neighborhoods, like, I mean, I'm kind of from the hood, but, like, I'm from the hood, but, like, you know, it varies by hood. Like, like, I'm Northeast LA is different from, like, East LA. And so, like, and as a female, like, walking at, like, 6-7 p.m. And so I was like, this is why I invested in a hydro flask, because I was like, that's gonna be my weapon if someone comes up to me. So it's like, how are we selling our skill sets, because we also deserve to get paid.
Well, I have a theory, like, people, like, who, like to keep us in that social work bubble are, like not wanting to get paid. It's like, is there's like a privilege in the struggle. So, like, you might have come from, like, money, and you don't like money, so you want to kind of, you know, be the social worker that does it for the love and doesn't do it for the money. And I feel like that's
what for the outcome, not for the income.
And that's what keeps the stigma alive, is people who probably have it already. And then they, you know, they're like, oh, well, I don't do it for that. But it's like, it's not fair, because, you know, some people are out here and they want to get paid, you know, and they should get paid. You know, like, if I work in a highly volatile situation, you know what I'm saying, I should get paid for my stress, for my time, you know. If I want to go and use my intellectual property and charge these universities, you know, $10,000, or a corporation, $20,000, I should be able to do that. And I shouldn't be judged for doing that, because, you know, there's a woman that's right, that wrote an anti-racist book. She's a white woman, you know, kudos to her for hustling, but she gets to go into, like, conferences and for $35K and tell people about racism. It's like, damn, like, you know, like, that's
like,
that's you know what I'm saying? So, and I ain't hating. Just let me, you know what I'm saying? Just don't look at me strange, but I want to do it too, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's what happens. Like, there's this, like, that stigma within the profession of, like, I don't know, this guilt of trying to ask money. And I get it, right? Like, it's still being empathetic to who we're serving. But I think these organizations are, like, how much are their head or CEO getting paid versus how much are these therapists getting paid and how much they're billing. Like, the billing is a lot of money. And so I think sometimes it's also tied to, and this is goes back to Sidier, but also therapists, that, you know, they work off the optimism of people like us that come from these same communities. And mm-hmm. then we want to serve our communities and they profit off of that. Like,
yeah.
It's like a weird cycle because yes, I'm going to give 100% because these are people that I care for. And this is my goal in life is to help, but also I'm not going to be sacrificing like a livelihood because mm-hmm. of that optimism of trying to help others.
Yeah.
So, but it's like a weird cycle. Cause then even in these nonprofits or things like that, then you're seeing like, who's their board members? Like, who are their head people running these organizations? And all of a sudden you don't see the diversity that you see where mm-hmm. the people on the field. So, and it's because we're not advocating for those positions or we have to kind of fight for that, but also financially I think we deserve to get paid.
Yeah, definitely, you know, because school is a lot of money, you know. School's mm-hmm. a lot of money. And I feel like because Oregon is so small, like I don't see like the wickedness of like nonprofits. Then like because like a lot of the board members, well hospitals definitely, but like other like nonprofits I really don't see like, you know, a big discrepancy. But like I feel like a place like LA, like you might see like how how kind yeah. of like disparities, you know, are. So,
and then communities get hurt. Like recently last year there was a huge nonprofit in LA that had like these $1 billion grants from like the city and stuff, and then they audited them and turned out that the like president of the organization was earning like $400,000. Like, this is like what the president of the United States salary is he was making as a head of a nonprofit in LA. And then it turned out that the organization didn't have money. So people found this out on Tuesday, and by Friday they shut down the whole nonprofit, like after school programs, therapy, like outreach initiatives, yeah. and they couldn't pay workers. And I was like, and who ultimately gets hurt? Like, not only the workers, but the people that they were serving, like mm-hmm. they or other organizations had to step in to like take care of after school stuff because these kids were left with like nothing. And so yeah I think it's because LA, it's like I forget that nobody's like, not everybody is the beast that is LA in everything.
Yeah. What do you do for self-care? How do you take care of yourself to wake up and do the great work you do?
The great work they do. I think it's forever a struggle of how to self-care. I'm a firm believer of trying to like proactively do self-care versus like the burnout, because I've been there. And so it's really identifying like my red flags and implementing that. I think... because I give, that's why I also try to figure out that how I'm social working myself, like that mentality of like, am I exercising? What am I eating? I've set boundaries of learning how to say no to people. Like if they want to do things and I'm just like, you know, I don't have that capacity to do that right now. And, really disconnecting, I think, a little bit from what is like social media and news has helped a little bit of like having that time for myself. Walking my dog. Watching trash TV sometimes.
Hey, there we go.
Yeah, like it just varies what I need the time of day. And I think right now what I've worked more is like in the mornings, having some time to myself.
Yeah. Yeah. I struggle with self-care too, but I've just been making time to exercise. Like, that's kind of just been my last thing, is like just, you know, because before, I mean, man, like I really like, you know, I just wouldn't do nothing. I just kind of just would take it. But this year has been taxing, you know, so I feel like it's like Saturday, you know, I only got a haircut. I haven't gotten a real haircut since like last autumn. Because, you know, because my barber like quit, and it was hard to find another barber because people would treat you like, you know, you just like, oh yeah, well, like, well, you know, you come to shop and wait for hours, like, fuck. So I just go, you know, and I'm a barber myself, so I just I would just cut it. Like, I just cut my own hair. But yes, this week, last week was so tough. Like, it was so hard. And then when Chadwick Boseman had died, I was like, you know what? I just didn't know what I was, like, flabbergasted. So I made it a point and got my hair cut.
Treat yourself. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because, like, I just, like, I can't, like, just kind of live like this. It's kind of like living just, you know, like, without taking care of myself and feeling good, you know? Like, it's just, it wasn't, you know, so... So I was exercising, and I'm making a point to get my hair cut every couple of weeks now. I found a guy who could cut it. I'm gonna keep going back to him. I told him, I was like, all right, man, I've been looking for a barber for a while. So if this cut is nice, and you got a new one. So
Yeah,
self-care is hard. So I definitely get what you mean when you say, you know, you try to be proactive.
But yeah, it's hard. Like, I have my weeks where I'm just like, And it goes in waves, and it's valid, right? Like, because we're going through so many emotions all at the same time that sometimes I'm just like, I need to isolate, and then I just need to, like, shut down, right? But then I need to know how to take myself out of that and kind of continue. And so that's where, like, support systems come. Like, I know if I kind of go MIA, my friends are like, hey, are you okay? Because I know if you're, like, depressed, like, I know that you do this, like, is it because you're depressed or you just need to refuel? And I'm like, okay, I'm just, like, refueling right now, like, I need time. But also, like I say, like, really setting those things that I'm like, okay, if I'm feeling like this, I need to call someone, or I need to, like you said, like, working out because I know that helps, or things like that. But it's hard.
Learning
process.
I'm here with you. Before we go, could you, and you being the person who does resume workshops and things, and could you want to give like tips on how to get a job in a macro role? Because, you know, before, let me explain myself why I asked this. I feel like social work, even though it's not supposed to be this way, but because mental health is so huge now, that it's almost like automatically you're a therapist. Like, you're a social worker, therapist. Like there's not even a question anymore. Like when you're in grad school, people ask you, are you going to be a therapist?
Or DCFS, like, you're taking child
away. Yeah, right. You know,
either like, or. Yeah. You're snatching kids. I'm like, no, tia, I'm not. Like, I'm not taking kids away.
Yeah, you're going to be a child service worker, or you're going to be a therapist. So, but how would one build their career up to become a macro social worker?
Yeah, like, I don't know if I have a direct key answer to it, but I think it's really not being intimidated to apply to jobs that are outside of the social work realm. And it's like, how are we translating the skill sets that we have to then these positions? And not only does the resume should reflect that, but your cover letter. So like, for example, if you are a therapist, right, but then you can do consulting or teaching organizations. Like, I recently did a workshop for school, and I really taught, like, just trauma, like, the trauma that we're going through COVID. This was, like, early on in COVID. Mm-hmm. And so it was teaching teachers how trauma looks with little kids, because this was, like, elementary, right? Like, how sometimes ADHD looks like trauma, and how fight, flight, freeze impacts education and what we're teaching. And so that is like meso macro, but still like using the clinical lens. And so I think that's where it is, where on the resume, it should reflect that and translate your skills and not be intimidated about these jobs that I may not have the experience for this. So I think that's where there's that disconnect. And I think seeing more social workers that are doing that help. Like, I know right now, like, for example, and some people are like, oh, but she just barely turned into a social worker. And I was like, what? Like, people say really weird stuff. Like Karen Bass, like, she's a Congress member. And she got her MSW, 2015? But she said because she needed it to then continue pivoting her career of what she was doing with communities. And some people are like, oh, but, like, she wasn't a social worker before. And I'm like, what? Like, what does that mean? And so I think it's, it's how you're translating your skill sets on your resume. So your resume, even though it may have social work experience, what are the key skills that job that you want to and you're applying to Or it can be really opening the doors and creating the job position that you want. And I think that's what sometimes we're scared of. I think recently I was just like, man, this guy did what I've been wanting to do for a while. And I didn't have the balls to do it. Like, yeah. So like, for example, I don't know if you recently saw that the Raiders, hired a social worker. And so yeah. I was just like, man, like I wanted to do that on a sports team. And yeah. here it is. Right. He's living the dream. Right. And so it's like really like, and I know like the NBA was recently looking for like it, but I know it's like hinting for that clinical therapy. But, like, an MSW can still offer those skill sets based on the experience that they have. And so it's sometimes kind of pushing that. I know one time I went to a career fair, and it was, like, a financial company. And I showed them my resume, and they're like, oh, this is, like, a social work resume. Like, we're looking for someone to help with our portfolios of financial companies, right, with our clients and seeing what they want to invest and all this stuff. And I was like, well, that's communication skills, and that's meeting clients where they're at, and this, this, and that. And then they sat there and they were like, oh, we never thought that we could benefit from a social worker. I was like, deuces, I don't want to do this, but yeah. I just wanted to prove to you that social worker.
You lost me.
So it's just how we're branding and marketing ourselves, but we struggle with that. With our worth again, that of our worth of as a profession, like what we can do.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I've seen that post. The guy for the Raiders, he had a little, he had the flex on us one time. He said,
his quote was so simple.
Yeah, right. It was just so, you know, it was so nice. I was like, damn, those social workers take kids, and then, like me, and then it showed him like in his office, like. The Raiders.
Like being a boss. Yeah. I definitely saw that. I think at USC, they really, I think it kind of died down a little bit. They were really pushing for that non-traditional. So like I knew someone that like worked for like the Dodgers Foundation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and he got hired, and it was like the first time they were having a social work intern, and they hired him, and he still works there, and he's like at Dodger galas. Yeah. And I was like, he's getting free tickets, free Dodger dogs to like social work. Like, dude, ultimate flex. Like, that's so great. Yeah,
well, I am glad that now the profession is opening up and people are seeing, like, the benefits of it, you know. I know someone, he's not a social worker per se, but he is a therapist. But all he does is, like, he has his own business where he goes and he tries to get, like, corporations how to, like, work with people to get the best out of their abilities. I was like, damn, that's a cold, you know, you go charge some corporations, you know, $10,000 just to get your employees to work to their top, you know, to their top tier. I was like, that's nice. I like that. So it's ways to get what you need.
Yeah.
You know, I lied. I got one more question. Are you going to go for your doctorate?
Okay. So I think about this once a year, because when graduation season comes around, and then I'm like, man, like I want to become a doctor, like that DSW, right? And I want to be Dr. Cortez. And then I see the tuition price, and I'm like, do I really need it? Is it feeding my ego? Like, is it just more because of the title, or do I really need it right now, right? And so then I'm like, 80K. I was like, yeah, I don't really need it.
Oh, for the program?
Well, the USC one that I was like looking into is like 80,000. I was like, I don't need another 80,000 in debt. Like, I think I'm good. And so I think I come into it like, I think it's awesome, and maybe down the line. But I think every time once a year hits, I think I would, this is just personal, and this is not because everybody has their different role as to why they do a DSW, but this is maybe for me because. You know, you're in school since like you're in kindergarten, and then it's like such a validation, right? Like graduation and coming around and that recognition. So I feel like I would be doing it more because of my ego of like having that doctor title versus like actually doing with it, because I don't know what I would do with it that I'm not already doing right now.
Yeah.
So I think like I could teach a class already if I wanted to, like I could, and I am not a research person, like although part of my job does have some research, but like reading and doing research and writing papers is just like not my thing. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm just like, probably not. But once a year, you'll catch me like on the website, like looking.
Yeah, I hear you.
How about myself, you? Is that something up for you?
I'm like 50. Uh-huh. When I'm like 50, I might, you know, but right now I'm chilling. But Dr. Scott does sound nice. I can't front.
Yeah, no, like I 100% like and I see people like really like every year and I'm just like, oh, they're such a boss, like really becoming like DSWs.
Right.
And doing the thing. But yeah, I don't see it. At least in the 5 years, I don't think so. I think so I'm tied to my job for at least like 5 years because it's like a grant. And I'm not saying I'm staying there, but I think I want to see the product from the beginning to the end of like the results since I'm doing like its research. But also like I really want to build my business that I just kind of really started fulfilling and seeing where that goes. So I think that's where I'm at right now, where I'm okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Like I even considered like school wise, like I registered for community college like a month ago and I was like, I want to do a certification in business. But then I was like, I don't have time for that right now. Like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
So I was like, maybe winter quarter, I will sign up for a class.
I feel you. I'm never doing that. Well, never say never, but that's not looking likely. Well, I appreciate you for joining me and sharing your vast journey in social work.
Thank you for inviting. This is really great.
No problem. And like I said before, thank you for coming on and sharing your experiences. Hopefully somebody got a lot out of it because, you know, this is why we do this. I want people to know that social work is more than just taking kids.
100%.
Taking kids in therapy.
Yeah.
All right, y'all. Peace.